Hi, C4 listeners. We're starting off the episode with a dedication to Adam Johnson, an American hockey player who sadly lost his life this weekend in a tragic accident during a game in the UK. It was a really horrible, tragic, random thing to happen to a player who was traveled all over the world chasing his dream to play hockey professionally. He was well loved by all his teammates, by all the fans that he has encountered, and we're very sorry to hear what happened, and we're sending all our love into the hockey community and Adam's community. And yeah, that's it.
Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust. This is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at LifeForce, joined virtually, as always, by Anna Forsythe at E4Sy03, otherwise known as Well-Fed Anna, because she just wrapped up dinner before sitting down to record a show.
That is true. Peek behind the curtain. We always record on Sunday evening, so it's usually either me or Chris saying, oh, dinner's taking longer than I thought. And this time it was me.
Yeah. I should point out, it's not always been Sundays. We just, we did the whole transition back to Sunday, but it's sometimes, pushing up to mealtime or into mealtime and we shift things around. But we're here, we're recording. And, we're fast approaching the end of a month. Can you believe we're only 2 days away from Halloween? I mean, you listeners, it might be a day. It might be past. However, Halloween is fast upon us. Are you dressing up for the occasion there, Anna?
So I'm kind of a Halloween Scrooge most of the time. So last year I wore cat ears Halloween. And that was my contribution to the Halloween costume competition. I should have seen that coming. I'm pretty low effort when it comes to Halloween. I've tried a bit harder this year. I even have two costumes because I have on Halloween the work day and then a party afterwards. One of my costumes I have stolen from work. I realize not everyone has access to costumes at their workplace, but when you work in animation and do all kinds of crazy things with that, sometimes you have costumes laying around, so I have stolen one. Since no one who listens to this works with me, I don't think, and it's a bit late anyway, but yeah, I'm hoping to go as Carmen Sandiego for the work costume.
So the answer to the question of where in the world is Carmen Sandiego, it'll be Vancouver.
Vancouver. Downtown Vancouver. I'm borrowing a trench coat, a red trench coat. The hat I have is more burgundy than red, but, make do. And then my secondary costume is a jumpsuit, so I'm going as Goose from Top Gun, because he's the one that died, so spoiler.
Spoiler alert!
Yeah, sorry. I haven't seen Top Gun. He died.
Well, every so often someone will say they haven't seen Top Gun, I'll see this, and it'll, blow my mind for a variety of reasons. One, it's,
Goose's
on
mind
TV.
Was certainly blown.
Every day. Okay, that takes it to an entirely different place. But two, it's the greatest movie of all time. Top Gun, greatest movie of all time.
No argument. And if you haven't seen it and you're wondering whether you should now, if you scroll back through my Twitter, go search for it. I did a C4 of the movies to Top Gun. So, I don't particularly love that movie apart from the volleyball scene because a girl is only human. But I thought that would make it spooky by going as the dead one.
It's Goose. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, it's low effort, free jumpsuit and aviators.
Yeah.
What about you?
That is me. I'm dressing up as a father. And I mean a dad to a six-year-old.
A six-year-old?
Yeah, something like that. Well, no, she's healthy. She gave me the sickness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, isn't parenting fun?
But, yeah, I'm not a dress-up type. I never really have been. Like, if I was part of a group, I would dress up because the peer pressure sort of would require that I follow through. So, like, in an old training job that I had every Halloween, because we had a few people who were really into it, we had to dress up. So, like, one year we were, like, the Training Dead. So, it was, like, when Walking Dead was all the rage in the early days, and so we all dressed up as zombies. And then another year, we all dressed up as 1980s fitness instructors. So, like, the fluorescent colors, the track suits, the headbands, the short shorts, stuff like that.
Yeah, I kind of love that. But, yeah, I haven't done Halloween in a while, so I'm excited to do a little bit. It's not my holiday. I did not partake in the Saturday Parade of Lost Souls, which was taking place nearby, because instead I was watching the Canucks, because that seemed more fun to me. But
yeah. Well, speaking of Halloween, the Vancouver Canucks will be playing on Halloween night, and hopefully they get a much better result than the ghoulish one that the referees provided this past weekend. However, we'll get into the week that was, which was pretty darn good if you happen to be a Vancouver Canucks fan. Before we get into Rewind, however, I got to say something to you, Anna. Hit it, Rockapella. Please tell me you got the reference.
I didn't get the reference. I'm sorry.
Oh, my goodness. You need to go and listen to the theme song to Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, the TV show.
Oh, I do remember it, but clearly not
hit
well
it,
enough.
Rockapella. Mm-bom.
See, I mean, I would say my generation, like Carmen Sandiego, is mainly just a PC game.
Oh, well, I mean, it was a PC game. It was a TV show. I mean,
and then it was TV.
It was a cartoon.
Again. Yeah, the Netflix version. I haven't seen it, but she looks like Kim Possible in the Netflix version, so it doesn't interest me.
Okay. Well. Hopefully what does interest you, though, is the effort that we got from the Vancouver Canucks over the past week. When we last left you, they were about to wrap up a road trip, and we had talked about how they seem to have turned things around after being called out in Philadelphia, and were on the verge to potentially having a successful road trip by every potential measure. They did, in fact, cash that in. They beat the Nashville Predators 3-2 in a game that, quite honestly, the Vancouver Canucks were in control of for the most part. It wasn't pretty. However, the Vancouver Canucks did what needed to be done. And you got to see goals from players not named Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, and Brock Besser, which is good news. We're starting to see the scoring bug catch across the team. You saw Thatcher Demko continue to be Thatcher Demko. In fact, you know, really what it comes down to is the Vancouver Canucks got themselves a lead and they closed the game down.
Yeah, honestly, like end of a long road trip to start the season and a road trip where they did get soundly beaten in two of those games. But the rest, they looked impressive and gotta say that last year's Canucks, like, they wouldn't be doing that, really. Like, the resilience of the Canucks is just so much better. We're less than a month into the season. I'm not gonna, like, get too excited, but yes, like, being able to bend and not break was really impressive.
And that's what's important. It's the bend, not break. Like, the Vancouver Canucks in past seasons, they broke. Like, there was no bending.
They were fragile.
Very much so. And this version seems to be much improved. And I know I am going to be the first one to be called out for even suggesting that much improved was possible, because I did not envision much improved as being even in the realm of conversation. No. But whatever they have figured out, they have figured out well. I don't know if it's a Rick Tocchet thing. I don't know if it's the approach to train camp right from the get-go. I don't know if it's the collection of pieces that they've thrown into the mix to work around their core. Maybe it's a little bit of columns A, B, and C.
Yeah. I mean, that's the point there, right? Like, I think when you say, like, Rick Tocchet, right, the point is that his systems are better. So it depends less on the constituent parts. Obviously, you still have to have good players, and you have to have players like Quinn Hughes and Pedersen leading the way. You need to have players like Hoglander and Besser having a bounce back, McKeev coming back and being good. But the idea of their structures being more solid allows for that to happen and makes that far more likely to happen.
Yeah. The game against Nashville, though, was, in my mind, more indicative of the direction as to which the team is going. Because as you pointed out, it was the last game of a fairly long road trip to kick off the season. They had started to move in the right direction, having got off to a, well, not got off to a rough start. They got what they needed out of Edmonton, yeah, but proceeded to not show up
for the Flyers. Hit the beach game in Philly.
Yeah. But what we then saw sort of continue into this past weekend was a Vancouver Canucks team who had started to see success in the systems that they have been, you know, provided with, and then confidence in knowing that should they continue to play the way they are being told, success will follow. I think the biggest indicator of this is actually the game against the Rangers, which we'll get to in a moment. But before that game against the Rangers was a game against the St. Louis Blues. The Blues came to town, I mean, they were there and
yes, spirit, physically, right? They were present. Yeah, spiritually, I don't know, maybe they were at a Halloween party or something else. I mean, but it does say a lot that, like, they're on the end of a back-to-back. They put their goal, their first-choice goalie in the against the Canucks, right? Which kind of shows what's going on in Alberta. But, yeah, they went just, they barely showed up, and that was just, like, but the Canucks still did something, right? Like, it wasn't the Canucks of yore, and when I say yore, I mean last year. Would they have put that dominant effort in, or would they have, like, played to match the low effort that the Blues put in?
Well, historically, the Vancouver Canucks played to their opponent.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this was the trap game. This is the game where the team should win.
Yeah.
Right? And the Vancouver Canucks would find a way to Canuck themselves out of it, at least in the recent times. During the successful times over a decade ago, different story. But again, we're seeing a team almost take advantage of their opposition, knowing that they simply need to put that pressure on. And then once they've gotten that goal, to almost like, okay, you couldn't deal with that pressure, we're just going to go and turn up the intensity just a little bit more and see how you handle that. Again, like old Canucks, they might come out of the gate flying, get the goal, cruise control.
Yeah, fully. And like the fact that like Demko had a shutout, but he's like way down the list of storylines, I think just shows like Canucks were just like ready to turn up the heat. You know, Quinn Hughes with his shooting skates on, as he seemed to have this year, holding his shooting stick.
Well, he listens to the show, and he obviously, you know, took note that we expected him to simply score all the goals.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, but it was just like, instead of getting into that winning position and fading away, Canucks just like, were like, no, let's go off. And, you know, they made Binnington sad, which we're all okay with here.
Are we really okay with Binnington being sad?
Oh, fully. Like, Binnington being unhappy. Yeah. Is like, you know, like, just a fun.
Leave it to us Canucks fans to hold grudges.
Burns, I know. Like,
Binnington. Benning. Oh, God. There's something about the letter B.
But just don't say anything bad. And we'll, like, Canucks Twitter holds grudges for ages. Like, I mean, we're going to talk about the Rangers game, but like, I still remember Jimmy Vesey.
You're going to get me started about 94.
Well, no, but like, also Jimmy Vesey, like, he played in Canucks for like a hot minute, but I still remember him leaving his car in Ottawa. That was very funny. And just, yeah. I mean, Jordan Bennington, he's kind of showed who he is many times through, like his comment about the Canucks. His attitude isn't necessarily an isolated incident. He's a baby. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, this was a game where the leaders just really took it to another level. Quinn Hughes, JT Miller, like, does JT Miller care again? What's happening?
Oh, he's given Fs. Like he has lots of Fs, and he's throwing them out in the ice like nonstop. Like this is the JT Miller that's earning the contract.
Yeah,
not just the JT we saw last year after the contract was signed.
Yeah, honestly, whether he's like taking his role in the new leadership group seriously, or he's trying sort of seeing that mood change in the locker room, I don't know, but he looks like he cares more, but his skills just look sharper. It's not like he was never the JT Miller that earned that contract after he signed it, but it came so infrequently that we kind of mm-hmm. thought he was gone completely. So yeah, that was great to see.
One of the other benefits of a game like this, where you just outclass and dominate your opposition, is that your coach is much more able to go and rotate the lineup a little bit. So in Nashville, Roenick played close to half the game. It was like 27 minutes. Quinn had like 26 or something like that. Granted, that's not anything more than the fact that there's your number one pair or number one, two pair, depending on how they're deployed. And I think, was it Tyre Myers got benched? I think your wish was granted.
Yeah.
In Nashville.
I mean, God, it's been an interesting week for Tyler Myers. Like, he's had two interesting weeks back to back, I'd say. Like, the Tyler Myers that should have been a forward was definitely, like, visible this weekend. The Tyler Myers that is reckless was visible this weekend, but also the Tyler Myers where he uses his height to be defensively, like, influential was visible. So every mm-hmm. single Tyler Myers we saw this weekend.
But the point that I was sort of going to get to is that, you know, both Roenick and Hughes had fewer minutes against the Blues. Roenick only got 1850. He was actually had fewer minutes than Carson Soucy did. Ian Cole, Quinn Hughes, both in the 20-ish minute range. But that, again, that's the type of game you need to work into your schedule, because it allows, you know, a much more balanced approach so that your stars get that breather, which played well, I think, into that game against the New York Rangers. The Rangers also on a road trip that had a swing through Alberta, where, they got to come into Vancouver and face a team for some real competition. Okay, can I pause here? If you had told me that Vancouver would be near the top of the division and the two Alberta teams would be nearer to the bottom at this point of the season, like after the first month, I would have laughed at you.
Yeah, honestly, like, hockey teams come in over to Western Canada, it's like a Canada sightseeing trip. You may as well skip the prairies. Like, they are just irrelevant right now. And that's mad to see when they have, like, such talented players. And I'm, like, Conn McDavid is just one, and he's out, obviously. That's a lot to do with Oilers' failures recently. But, you know, like, Leon Draisaitl, like, what's happening? Like, they just had the outdoor
Heritage
game.
Classic.
The Heritage Classic. Yeah, I was like, was the Heritage Classic R1 that we messed up? No. Heritage Classic.
Edmonton was up 3-1 when I sort of flipped to it for a bit.
It was 5-2 The only thing I've seen of it is Chris Tanev getting interviewed by Kevin Bieksa and referencing the whole Louis Heritage Classic outdoor game that wasn't really outdoors incident. But yeah, like, they're struggling. It's still October, you know.
Yeah.
Early days, but.
But yeah. Nonetheless, Vancouver, top of the division. So they take on the New York Rangers, and this turned into a game as to which you got your money's worth. If you happen to be in the Raj, you got bonus hockey, which is always good. Bonus hockey means you're getting extra value, but you also got an entertaining game. We're not talking about bonus hockey because it was boring, it was slow, and oh my God, overtime suddenly happened. You had a Vancouver Canucks team fall behind early, only to then go and get a lead themselves in glorious fashion, albeit with somewhat suspect circumstances as to the timing of penalties. But 7 goals were scored in this game, Anna, only 2 at even strength. And one of those 2 was when it was 3v3.
Right. Yeah, I mean, with, as enemy of the show White Aunt said, referees were having main character syndrome last night, and so obviously to fit that narrative, like, all the goals were gonna be special teams. Yeah, like, the Canucks penalty kill went, like, was the worst in the league last year at certain points. It's looked more resilient this year, but if you're gonna take dumb penalties, which the Canucks did, even given the fact that the referees were eager to give them, like, you're going to get punished. And so when you have a player like Artemi Panarin on the other team, like, yeah. And also Tyler Myers on the other team, on the Canucks team, you know.
Well, hey, Tyler got himself a special teams goal.
Yeah.
He got a shorty.
Yeah, I mean, that's because his offensive...
Not second shorthand, but second goal.
Offensive abilities are... It's not just time-wise being offensive and... Sometimes he's offensive, other times he's offensive. But yeah, like... Tyler Myers had a good game.
Yeah.
Did he do dumb stuff? Yeah. But he scored a goal and made some good defensive reads. What?
I think we'll get to overtime in a moment, but the goal that I think had most people hot under the collar was the too many men call in the third period.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to consider the Vancouver Canucks pre-talk it. So both Green and Boudreau had same issues. Too many men calls happen far too frequently. It seemed to be like once a week there was a too many men call, which...
Yeah, the Vancouver... That's bench organization.
Yeah.
Not to be envied.
And, you know, looking at the calls it was made, we have to consider New York got busted the period earlier for too many men. Generally, and I mean, it's funny how it works this way, referees find a way to exact retribution to ensure the hockey gods are appeased, that the game is even. So you're not going to get away with even a close call in that regard. The problem was that, PDG was already in the box with a double minor. And Canucks prior to that point had been not doing too badly killing off a penalty.
Yeah. And the double minor, like, was unfortunate. It was accidental, but it was bad. Like, Mike Vinograd was bleeding for the rest of the game, I think. Yeah. So the first penalty was unfortunate, but inevitable. Second penalty... I didn't like it, but I wasn't like, that's crazy. I didn't think it was insane to call that. I think it was one of those on the line things. But
to me, it's the type of call that if it were not called, you could see why not. Like, this is where, you know, when it's sort of one way or the other, those ones, I think, are what starts to irritate the fan base. Like, if it's clear, there will always be those who will argue against it. But I think the most would say, yeah, you can't, that can't not be called. I know, double negative. But then take that logic into what occurs in overtime when, you know, the defense is that, oh, they just want the players to, you know, solve the game on the ice themselves. Well, they found a way to do it by cheating.
The Ron McLean argument. Like, that's insane to me. Like, I know we talk about, like, it's an oversimplification to just say, call the game, call the rules of the game. But seriously, it should not matter that it's overtime. Like, I know it. I don't think there's some big conspiracy to stop the Canucks winning. It's more just like putting the whistles away and just calling a fast overtime game.
In the way the code works is that you allow the players to win the game on the ice. But the code also states that you do something that results in a direct scoring opportunity, it gets called 9 times out of 10. Apparently overtime, or at least that situation, was the 1 time out of 10 it doesn't. Like, the moment that occurred, it's 3-on-1 the other direction. We're not talking about it like
that's
the corner and there being a recovery.
That's why you have to call the games like tightly, just as tightly in overtime, because something happens and then it goes the other way completely. Yeah. Like, a player slightly whiffs on the puck and it changes the game.
You know, before that occurred, can you explain to me how, is it Shesterkin? I don't know how to say his last name.
Yeah,
how he was able to stone Kuzmenko?
He is magic. He's a phenomenal goalie.
Twice. He stoned Kuzmenko twice.
Yeah, I mean, help a brother out. Like, he was so good. He's so good. Like, I don't have any more superlatives for Igor Shesterkin. I think he's just a fantastic goalie. And as much as Canucks talk about their goalie coach, I think the same is true on the East Coast there. They have a great goalie coach and phenomenal talent. So, yeah, he might be my goalie to watch this season because I can't watch Vasilevsky. So, it was unfortunate. I still think, I'm not going to say I'm glad it happened that way.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the Canucks should have won that game, and they didn't because of bad refereeing, because of Shesterkin, and then a couple of decisions that could have gone either way.
Yeah.
That's got to rally your team, no?
Well, I think so. Like, this is the thing, is that you take that moment and, in turn, manufacture some emotion that you can then channel into your next game, which happens to be against the Nashville Predators. If you're the Preds, you're probably looking at that and saying, oh, and we get to be the team that gets to come into Vancouver next. Yay. Yeah.
And they already beat them. Like, that's a great narrative.
Yeah. Speaking of this upcoming week, so the Predators are in town for Halloween. The Vancouver Canucks then head back out on the road for a quick jaunt down to California. They're in San Jose for a Thursday night matchup with the San Jose Sharks, only to come back home to take on the Dallas Stars on Saturday for a little hockey night in Canada action. I, one, have no idea why the home, and it, like Rick Tocchet talked about it on After Hours, where it's like, we were on a road trip. We slept in our own beds for one night, essentially, and then we had to play again.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like we really got we're at home. It wasn't until really New York that we've settled in and we had to go back to back. They do get a break with the Preds, back out on the road quick, and then to come home again. Like, it's the back and forth. But hey, it's the NHL, and I'm not knocking it. Every team goes through situations like this. It's just a weird quirk.
Yeah. I mean, Canucks, that road trip in itself was quite a lot of traveling, and then they come back and it's like, okay. Back, like, you get a one night off, a back-to-back, and then like out on the road again. So yeah. It's tough, but
looking at these games, like Nashville, you have to think the Vancouver Canucks have a little chip on their shoulder. And based on that, I would like to think the Vancouver Canucks can get a couple of points. Yep. They go down to San Jose to take on a team who has yet to get a win as we record. They have 1 point on the season.
Yeah.
They are -26. I know plus minus doesn't mean a lot, but from a team perspective, when they're -26.
It means something. Yeah, it means something.
You know, and then, you know, mixed in, the Dallas Stars are also coming to town. Dallas is going to be a much better game. And I shouldn't take away from Nashville. Nashville is a good team, and that should be a good game as well. It's just they're coming into a situation where I think Vancouver is going to either prove they've got the mettle or show that they've still got some flaws they have to hammer on out. But this could potentially be a three-dub situation.
Yeah, I mean, one, I don't know if that was intentional wordplay with metal and hammering out, but very good. But yeah, that's honestly my takeaway from this week is Canucks resiliency. Like, last year's team would not respond to Saturday's injustice, to give it quite a big word, in any meaningful way. So we've got to see what kind of team this season is.
Anyhow, we'll be recording in a week's time where we get to talk about whether or not we know what we're talking about or whether or not we don't know what we're talking about. But regardless, we're going to talk about it because that's what you and I do, right? We talk. Anyhow, you're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
I didn't happen to see what occurred out in Abbotsford live. I don't know if you did.
I was watching the game live. Thankfully, I actually didn't see too much of it. I did see the hit live, but yeah. For those of you that weren't watching, Paul Colson got hit and basically turnstiled. He was dumped on his head.
I was going to say, to use a wrestling vernacular, it seemed to be like a DDT almost.
I don't know what that is, but yes, I'm going to go with that. And yeah, it was a very scary moment. He was, and just to warn you, this does not sound pleasant, but yes, he was convulsing on the ice and was taken away on a stretcher. The game was paused for a little bit, taken away to hospital, and he's, by all accounts, he's okay. He had traveled with the team on their road trip. I don't think he will play. But yeah, he was, you know, up and alert and walking around the next morning, so he seems to be okay, but it was scary, right? And for me, two issues kind of come out of this. One, why did they need to play the last 5 minutes? It was like a nothing game. Like, both sets of players, you know, had to stand there and watch as, you know, the stretcher came off the ice. Colorado was just, like, clearly the players were not comfortable. It was already 5-2 at this point, and just, like, no one wanted to play for the rest of it. I don't understand how the game's integrity would have been affected if they just called it at that point. Because they didn't know at the time how serious it was. Yeah. So that's my first question. But my second question really is, what are we doing with head injuries here? And I'm talking about at a professional hockey level. Like, at the NHL level, really, because as we kind of have seen time and time again, NHL kind of sets the bar, right, for how things are dealt with.
Do you mean sets the bar in the sense of hockey?
Well, or... I just mean, I guess, if they're not doing the right thing, like, they're definitely not going to be doing the right thing later, like, lower down the ladder. And, yeah. I just, it's a real concern to me. What can we be doing, like, and is the answer more punishment for those hits? I don't know.
Yeah,
because it was bad. It was really bad hit.
I don't know the answer, and I'm not trying to shy away from the conversation. I recall when the NHL enhanced its rules around head being primary point of contact, and in a preseason game. After that had occurred, Matthias Holland got caught in the tracks and just absolutely destroyed someone. I can't remember who the player was that he essentially annihilated. But Matthias came through, and in slow-mo, it quite clearly showed that Matthias cleared him out at the head, and then the body followed. Mm. Now, there were those that said, well, that's a good hockey play because the player had his head down, right? There's that argument. The player had their head down. You got to be aware of your surroundings, never have your head down. And yet, regardless of that, the rule quite said if the principal point of contact was the head, it's a 5-minute match and supplemental discipline. And he got two. Like, I don't think he actually got a game. I think he got 2 minutes. And I remember I actually wrote a post on Canucks Hockey Blog about it at the time saying, I don't understand how that doesn't qualify as a hit to the head. I am not suggesting it's not a hockey hit in the sense of the old school belief. I'm not saying that the player didn't have their head down. That was all true. But the rules took that out of the equation. If this, then that. And since that point in time, while I think the league has gotten better, it's still nowhere near to the point where if the primary point of contact is a player's head, you're off for a spell. Like, I think that's how severe it has to be. And people be, oh, that's... that'll ruin the game and players will dive. I'm pretty confident players aren't going to dive if the contact isn't to the head. Like the situation here that happened in Abbotsford, I mean, it was quite clear as to what happened. And if you're not, as a league, going to protect a player from that type of injury, then what does... the code. Well, the code doesn't give someone's health back. The code doesn't set the tone as to prevent an injury like that down the road. No matter how many people say, well, it scares someone from having a dirty hit. That wasn't really, I wouldn't suggest the player came out with any malicious intent. It was a horrible play. I don't, you know, I may not intend on you getting hurt badly.
Yeah.
But again, I put you in harm's way. I should be punished for that.
That's the thing. I mean, like, with VAR in football, trying to interpret player intent is just...
well, okay.
I think, one, impossible, but, like...
VAR in football is a whole different, you know, ball of wax now.
But the thing is, if you make certain plays, you're not taking the responsibility not to hurt someone properly. Mm-hmm. Like, who... it doesn't matter what your intent is. If you make that play, you're being reckless enough with someone's safety.
Well, it's to use the football or soccer analogy here, it would be akin to me trying to kick the ball that's in the air and catching your head with my cleat. Doesn't matter if I got the ball first.
Yeah.
I have my foot being that high is in itself a foul. I'm not intending to kick you in the head. In fact, I might get the ball and then get you in the head, which the way soccer is played, ball first generally negates most other issues. But it's the simple act of putting you into a position of danger that is a foul. And that's where hockey needs to get to that place. Maybe not to the same extent because of how the game is played, but I think there is a balance there to be had.
Yeah. I think... Yeah, we just need to move further towards that. There's just certain things you can do. And there'll always be things you can't control. But I would say that one of the things you can control is, you know, like, punishment for hits. Like, as far as I can tell, Keaton Middleton, who hit Pocosin, has played in every game since then. So I don't think any supplemental discipline has been served.
Well, no, because in the sense of how hockey looks at something like that, they don't view that as malicious or worthy of supplemental discipline. And then there will be those that will tell you, Anna, you're only reacting to this because of the injury and because of the player convulsing on the ice. Maybe that's true, but why did that happen?
Yeah, I think we need to look on what happened to Podkosin as a lucky escape, not, you know, oh, it's fine, like, because he's fine. I mean, one, he hasn't played yet, so we don't fully know. And two, like, yeah, that's not how we should look at it. I just think we need to get braver with supplemental discipline and, like, you know, making players miss games, making teams reassess what kind of players they have on the ice and how they're encouraging their team to play. Yeah, I don't want to get into a debate about gambling because that's a whole other kettle of fish. But right now, an Ottawa Senators player is serving a 41
for betting on sport.
For betting on sport, as far as I can tell, not like as far as they can tell, not hockey, right?
Yeah, and this is so that's the part that, like, again, I don't know the parameters as to sports betting not being allowed in the NHL, considering you watch a game and it is sports betting wall to wall every commercial break.
Yeah, but to me, like, I do understand the people saying, like, how do we expect these athletes not to bet when every single commercial, especially in Ontario, like, where it's, I think, even looser than it is here. Like, honestly, no shade to former host Matt Lee, but, like, the Play Now Sports adverts really trouble me when they're saying, like, it's, like, do you know the most basic thing about hockey? Then you can bet on the game. And it's like, oh, God, they just...
Know your limit, play within it, Anna.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, whole different show, but that situation is so weird because no indication.
Yeah, I'd like to have a proper debate on this. Cause to me, I was like 41 days. That's a month though. Like, to me, I was like, I get the debate about whether, like, he should be, like, the ban should
not
be
betting on hockey.
Yeah. But to me, I'm like, 41 days doesn't seem. Like, I know that's a lot in a hockey season, but, like, that's less than a month. I mean, that's just over a month.
You've taken the lid off of Pandora's box here, but I have to ask, how many players make bets over the Super Bowl?
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree.
That's okay, but doing it legitimately is not?
Yeah. Like, honestly, let's have another gambling episode because I have so much to say on the subject. But, yeah, I was just like... Okay, that does seem like a lot, but why aren't we seeing player bans that go that long? Like,
because that's not hockey related, so you punish the living daylights out of it, but hockey related stuff, yeah, that's just the way just the game's, like, played.
I know we've just talked about whether the injury is bad or not shouldn't have an effect. It should be the danger of the play, but there's plenty of players who are out for months and months because of some reckless play on the ice.
One thing that I always get reminded of is anytime the league starts to quote unquote crack down on something and there's a metric ton of calls in the preseason and the first few weeks or month of the season, and then suddenly the whistles seem to go away.
I know.
The league is, and teams are very fast to trot out the players have learned how to work within the context of the rules. Whether there's truth or that or not, I have to then suggest that, well, if you want to go and crack down on stuff, do it. And what you're telling us is being true should be true there too.
That's the thing. Like, we have just spent the previous section criticizing the officiating, but when an official makes a call on the ice and says, like, you know, that was incredibly reckless, like, ejecting you from the game. And then the next day the player goes into a hearing and doesn't get anything. Then doesn't that undermine what the on-ice officials are doing as well?
Yeah. Well, an on-ice official, when they go and they assess a match penalty or any subsequent on-ice discipline, they have absolutely no control over the what next, right? Because when I officiate a soccer, you might have done something the most egregious, but the most that I can give you is a red card. And then in my report, I would write down the details as to what occurred. I passed it on to whomever else. And I remember one situation where it was in a men's league game. A player took his cleats and quite literally, you know, kicked a guy in the back of the knee. Like, right in front of me, he knew what he was doing. The moment it happened, I blow the whistle and I get the red card out. He's walking. Like, he knew exactly what he did. How many matches do you think he got for that?
None.
No, because you always get the +1 in soccer, right?
You're meant to get 3 for a straight red in Premier League.
He got +2. I was shocked because I refereed a month later and I see this player on the pitch and I'm like, that can't be right. Well, they have cards that need to be present for you to play. And he was back on the pitch. Like, the punishment he got was less severe from a player who happened to use some naughty language.
Yeah.
Like, and again, I mean, I bring this to light because you look at what happens in hockey. They will punish things that are far less egregious than something that puts a player's safety at risk, a player's life in danger.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Like, the, like, puck over the ice. Sorry, puck over the glass is the same.
Well, because delaying, like, the game is horrible, Anna. Yeah. You might end someone's career prematurely, but hey, them's the breaks.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's the wrong expression, but yes.
I didn't think that one through.
No. And also, like, because I think this conversation is bigger than officiating in terms of what makes players safe on the ice. I do wonder if, like, there needs to be another conversation about equipment. I mean, I don't want to dwell on the tragic accident this weekend, but when Philip Hughes in cricket suffered a devastating and terrible injury, and he suffered a blow to his head, and he unfortunately passed from that. It is now mandatory for all players to wear stem guards on the back of their helmet, which protects the most vulnerable parts of their neck. That wouldn't have actually saved Phil Hughes, but it makes the game safer. The visors being grandfathered in, even that's troubling to me because clearly all the
helmets got grandfathered in. I remember watching players skate around without a helmet.
It's like crazy to me. Like, the any Canucks player, like any player really, but like any Canucks player especially that would play without a visor was always crazy to me because, like, how can you, like, especially when Manny Malhotra was on the coaching staff, and then just how can you have seen that happen and not?
Well, I mean, and I'm not trying to discount what you're saying because I agree with it, but a player who to say, I've never had this on before and I'm suddenly required to use it and it alters my game in such a way that it doesn't allow me to continue to play the game I play, that part I understand because you don't have, one, the runway to figure it out, and two, the team, because it's a business, don't care. We'll find someone who can't, right? And that's where I feel like I understand why the grandfathering of these situations takes place, but I think that the governing associations need to be much more aggressive when it comes to player safety and especially when it comes to equipment at younger ages. Get players accustomed. One of the reasons why helmets became a thing was because it was mandatory at the younger age and more of the younger players just brought the helmets into the league and suddenly, oh, we got to wear helmets? I always have and I can't think of a world where I wouldn't. Same with visors. Like, the more you get the younger ages doing it, developing the game with that, I think it serves a purpose. But again, I also am not naive to think that there are so many out there that would tell me I know nothing about the sport. And to them, you're probably right. I've never actually played hockey on ice.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. And I get that it's hard, especially if you're not a skilled player at the top of your game, to take away any sort of advantage you think you have, or like risk any of that, your game going away. But yeah, to me, I'm just, I think it's just so reckless, and there's lots of people that could be doing more. I just think, yeah, the league is one of them, the NHL.
Speaking of the league and doing things, they did something right since we last recorded, Anna.
That's very true. I literally just remember that as I was talking.
Now, please pause a moment and consider they did something stupid and they're wrong.
Correcting. Yeah.
But have now done a right to remedy the wrong. So I feel that maybe credit isn't due for being a good league, but credit should be due for realizing you did the dumb and you're trying to fix the dumb.
Yeah. So here we want to shout out Travis Dermott, former Canuck, who became an unlikely hero in some ways, but was undoubtedly part of the NHL's decision to reverse their ban on Pride tape. So Travis Dermott has been using Pride tape throughout his career. One of the many reasons that I liked him when he played in Vancouver. In fact, he didn't give us a lot of time on the ice. Unfortunately, he suffered a concussion and didn't play a lot for Vancouver. Got another start. He's playing in Arizona right now on a two-way contract. You know, not got a lot of career security here. But he decided, hell with a ban. I am taping up my stick like I always do and putting on Pride tape. And conversations that were being had behind closed doors about reversing the ban sort of got forced to the front, and the ban was reversed.
Yeah. Well, I think he simply called the league's bluff. Like, the league painted themselves into a corner. They probably realized they had done, like, because if you recall, and I mean you, Anna, but our listeners, the NHL had sent out a confusing memo to all the teams. And in clarifying it, went out and said no to everything and anything under the sun because it would be all be bad. And in doing so, created this situation themselves. Like, I'll actually concede, I don't think the league ever viewed Pride tape as an issue.
Yeah,
but then what about question started to occur?
Yeah, I know. I mean, a lot of people were saying they just had no idea why the NHL would do something, because it's one thing to think you're protecting your players in banning special jerseys, because then players don't have to make the decision about whether they wear them or not.
Don't ask, like, don't tell.
Yeah, it's fully misguided, but that's what they think they're doing. By banning Pride tape, there was just no point to it apart from making a rod for their own back. But it does go to show, like, Connor McDavid said he didn't like it. In any other sport, if a player so much as mentions in public, like, the best player in your league mentions in public that they do not like a decision like that, that's pretty inconsequential. It would get reversed, like, within hours. If, like Messi didn't like something that was going on in the MLS.
If Messi said we shouldn't play matches on Wednesdays anymore, they should be on Mondays. Hot damn, guess what's happening next season?
Yeah, exactly. Just like the NHL does such a bad job of marketing stars, and listening to its stars, but I still think, like, there were so many other players that could have made a difference, but
well,
Travis Dermott was one.
And just to that point, like, to use Connor McDavid, he spoke up, and I applaud him for doing so. But if he had put the tape on his stick in the first game,
yeah,
this is like, and again, this is not knocking what Connor did, and I feel it's also important not to undervalue or devalue what Travis Dermott did, because I mean, Connor is not being cut; he's not going to get punished. Travis could have, the league could have come down on him hard. But I think the league came to its senses, because had they done something, there were a whole lot of problems coming their way. One, they've already said color of any tape on a stick is perfectly fine. So to then outlaw that makes the slippery slope very slippery. Two, the PR disaster it would have been for the league.
Which, yeah,
if, one thing the NHL avoids is, I should rephrase that. Avoids is an extremely horrible PR disaster. They like PR disasters not because they walk into them. They're like, why is everyone mad? We don't get it.
It is funny. I was talking about hockey to someone this past weekend and explaining the Pride. Was it this past weekend? Anyway, explaining the Pride tape thing. And they do not watch sport of any kind, but I kind of said that hockey was the least popular of the major sports, and they were like, well, shouldn't they be appealing to sort of minorities then in order to grow the game? It's just like...
You'd think.
Yes, you would think.
Actually, just on that note, I was reading an article in the United States, and like the World Series, which is taking place right now, has lower ratings in the United States than esports.
Oh, whoa.
Now,
there you go. Baseball why is dying. That?
Well, this is America's pastime, and it's being beat by right now NBA, National Football League, NASCAR, esports, and Major League Soccer is apparently like right on their tail. Much of that's the Messi effect. But what does that tell you about the NHL in the United States right now? If they're that far down the list. Like, you used to talk about the Big Four as being hockey, baseball, football, basketball. Hockey's not in the conversation there. So to that point, I would think this is where you start looking at opportunity to appeal to a much broader audience than the one that you think you have and may have lost without knowing it.
And let me give another shout out here to the Arizona Coyotes, who not only backed up Travis Dermott, but they were copying content I'd seen elsewhere, in that I think some baseball team had some NFLers who'd never watched baseball before.
Oh, yes. Tennessee Titans.
Their
social team is top notch.
So the Arizona Coyotes sent two Phoenix Suns players to a Coyotes game. And, you know, like, they'd never seen NHL before, and like, they put out a funny video to do with that. Like, yeah, it's just the same content we've seen elsewhere, but like, it was good, and just like, showing a different marketing, like a different market, enjoying hockey because it was two black players who had never seen hockey before. Like, we criticized the Coyotes plenty, but they've done pretty well this week.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, conversation for another episode, but the Coyotes are in a position where they can do that because there isn't an audience to upset.
Yeah, like,
They can be different because they have the clearing to do so, which is, is a good thing.
Using that position wisely, I'd say.
Yeah. Anywho, we have like 6 podcasts worth of conversations just out of this last segment. To consider, so maybe that's something we can do in a future episode, but we are here at the end of our normally scheduled episode. Big news from the C4 podcast front. We're now on both Instagram and Threads, but someone has both C4 podcast, which again, I am accustomed to because we're the C4 podcast on Twitter, because that's all I could get. But someone has the C4 podcast on Instagram, and as a result, that's held the Threads account. So if you want to follow us on Instagram, there's absolutely nothing. I have no intention of posting on Instagram in the near future, but potentially on Threads. We're at the Real C4 Podcast on both. So it's big news. I mean, I set that up because, let's be honest, Twitter, X, whatever it happens to be called in the moment, it is not doing so hot, and I needed to find an alternative social media platform for us to continue to share our content on. You're not on Threads yet, Anna.
I'm not. I do have the Threads app, but I'm scared of it. Yeah. I know Twitter/X is just awful, but like Canucks Twitter is better than ever. Like you think that it can't be topped, and it just continues getting better.
Like on Threads, the number of people like, I really wish there was Canucks Threads, because they try not to say I like Canucks Twitter there. And yeah. I agree. Like when I talk about the game, it's difficult to connect with other people who are. One, by design, Threads isn't really as easy to connect sort of in a broader sense because there's no hashtags there. But two, there's just fewer people in the Canucks scene that have sort of made that leap and are actively talking about it. And then when they do, trying to find their content to engage is difficult. So it's sort of a catch 22. But yeah, I'm not on Twitter all that often anymore. I sign in a couple times a week just to check in, see what spam bots have messaged me, and then, find myself elsewhere. Anywho, you can also go to our website, c4podcast.com. It's broken, but it's there. It's got a widget. Back catalog can be accessed. That's cool.
Which is what you want.
And if you wanted to help us in that area, you're like, man, why don't you guys get the website fixed? Well, that costs money. You got to pay good people to do good work. And as a result, only way to help us in that regard is to go to support.c4podcast.com, which will send you to buy me a coffee, or as Anna and I like to call it,
buy me a pint.
And you can support us either in a one-off basis, buying us a pint or two, or in a monthly or annual contribution, which helps us keep the lights on and pay for really the costs of making the show. It just helps defray that from the pocket and ensure that we are still around. And at some point in time, if I find the time or we can make things work, is we'll start creating some supporter-only content. But again, when that will be and what that will be, who knows? I was thinking like Snacks Size C4, where we talk about snacks.
Yeah, that's a possibility. But any and all like contributions that you could make, we appreciate. Like, we understand like annual contribution is pretty daunting. So if you just have a couple of spare bucks every now and then, we appreciate that too, big time.
Yeah, and that's key. It's not a commitment if it's just a one-off, but it's still appreciated just as much. Mm-hmm. Anna, any final words of wisdom for all of our listeners this week?
I don't want to go back to the big heartbreaking thing, so I won't. I think what we always say in these really tough situations really holds true. Just hug your loved ones real tight.
Can't say it any better than that. Again, I'm Lightforce. She's A4Size03. You can find us on X, Twitter, and I'm also on Threads. But this is the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com, with We Out.